Declare the meeting of Central Tablelands Water Board at 10:34 a.m. Welcome everybody. I'd like to start with the acknowledgement of country. I would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people who are the traditional custodians of the land. I'd also like to pay our respects to their people, both past and present, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal Australians who are present or who are listening to our recording. In accordance with the Central Tablelands Water Code of Meeting Practice, this meeting will be audio recorded and that recording will be uploaded to Council's website within 2 weeks after the meeting. By speaking at the meeting, you agree to being audio recorded. Please ensure that if and when you speak at this Council meeting, that you ensure that you are respectful to others and use appropriate language at all times. Council does not accept any responsibility for any verbal comments made during council meetings which may be inaccurate, incorrect, defamatory or contrary to law. It does not warrant nor represent that the material or statements made during the meeting are complete, reliable, accurate or free from error. Thanks everybody. Now apologies. So item 4, apologies and applications for a leave of absence by members. I think we have every council member here. Correct?
Yes.
Thank you. So there's no apologies. Confirmation of minutes from the previous meeting. I hope everyone has a copy of minutes. Can I have a mover and a seconder? Councillor Ewan moves, second. Councillor Somerville. Any comments on previous minutes? No comments? Okay, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that's carried. Any matters arising from the previous minutes? No matters arising. I think we can move on. We don't need to do that. And any disclosures of interests? No disclosures. Nothing to declare for me. Thank you. Item 8 is public forum. We have.
There's no public forum.
There is no public forum. Thank you. Item 9, chairperson's minutes. I would like to briefly indicate on record the resignation of our general manager to take up a position as the general manager of Lockhart Shire, which is a wonderful opportunity for Gavin to go back home to where he grew up and to be the general manager of the General Purpose Council. I'd like to, on behalf of the board, thank Gavin for his many years of service as the general manager. I know that it was a very difficult decision for you to make to move away from Central Tablelands Water, where you've been the general manager for about 10 years. And in that time, a number of great projects have come to fruition. So the Torquemec Reservoir, the link to through Woodstock, the link to Orange. There's a number of other projects that that have been carried out in your time. And I'd like to thank you for, I know you're staying on for a little while, so the next few months while we recruit your replacement. But I'd just like to thank you on behalf of the board and the consumers and customers of Central Tablelands Water for your great service to this organisation. And wish you very well in your new role.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate those kind words. And as the Chair said, it was a very difficult decision to make. However, it was a great opportunity to apply for a position at Lockhart Shire Council. As the Chair indicated, it's getting closer back home to my family. My aging parents that helped them out, and my sister as well. But also, I've got my family in Orange, and I'll always have my family in the Central West, so We've got to work through that transition, which will be difficult. But I'm looking forward to the new challenge. I've really appreciated my time here at Central Tablelands Water over the last 15 years. It's a great organisation. It's provided me with many opportunities, and I've really enjoyed the friendships and professional working relationships that I've developed over those 15 years. And what the council, in my position as general manager, has exposed me to on the political side of things with the joint organisation, as well as going to Parliament House in Canberra, as well as in Sydney, to meet with ministers. It's been a great experience for me, and it's helped with my professional development. So I've really appreciated those opportunities to work obviously close with the councillors, as well as the staff. I had a great team behind me to achieve everything that we have achieved collectively. And I will miss that, but as I said, I'm looking forward to the new opportunity in Lockhart, in leading another reputable organisation. So thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to make a comment?
Can I comment that we're not clapping to see you go?
No, we're not clapping to see you go. Look, we wish you all the very, very best in your role, and I'm sure it'd be a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to item 10, councillor representation. Has anyone asked an opinion? Councillor Somerville?
I'll go first on this. Maybe I just noted two things since the last meeting. We had the CDW picnic day, 22nd of March.
Indeed.
Which was a great day.
And you played way better than me, so.
9 holes of golf at Canowra, followed by a barbecue. Mm-hmm. And then there was the budget workshop at also Canowra on the 3rd of April. So they're the two things I've been involved in since the last meeting.
Thank you. Councillors, any other?
Can I just ask a question, please? And it might not be the appropriate space, but I'm just thinking about it. Henry Lawson Festival, we usually give a sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen it in these notes, and it just occurred to me while sitting in this room. But it's not there. But that would probably be a council, or not representation. When you're thinking of things to do,
yes.
Instead of those, that might be something else
that
might be
something.
Yeah.
That,
I don't know. I don't know.
Would you be talking about the donation or the support?
Yeah,
generally, we normally do that. I haven't received anything through as yet, but once we receive that, we'll put that through to council. However, the next meeting will be June when the vessel bill we'll reach out to council to see if we can have that approved. Obviously, offline for any donation there that the council wishes to make to that organisation. Normally, we do. It's usually $250. Last year, I think it was $500. Donated, so if council were happy to do that, I'll follow up with Wheaton Council regarding that that festival. So I'm sure council would still like to support that festival.
Yeah. Thanks. And yes, I attended the same events that Councillor Somervale's mentioned.
And the JO board meeting.
The JO board meeting. We've had a meeting, online meeting with the team doing the Lobular Water Security Project. I've also attended chair induction with you.
The joint organisation.
Well, no, with you, as in CDW induction.
CDW as well as
the yeah. And the water portfolio of the JO. So I've had a couple of meetings with the water portfolio as well. There's quite a few things. And no one else? No. Okay. We'll move that. I don't think we need to move and...
No.
Any notice of motion?
No, we haven't received any notice of motion.
Okay. And so we're up to item 12, reports of staff. I'll start with 12.1, which is General Manager Report on the board meeting of the joint organisation held in 2 February. Kevin?
Through you, Mr Chair. The Chair and myself attended the JO board meeting. Councillor Somerville also attended the board meeting representing Blanshire Council. Briefly, my report there. It was great to see Councillor Somerville also recognised for his years of service to the JO board and to the region at that meeting in his role as Chair of CTW over the last 10 years. So that was good to see. With regards to the meeting, from a water perspective, there was a lot of reporting on the different submissions that have been developed and submitted over the last couple of months, in particular the Joint Select Committee on Protecting Local Water Utilities from Privatisation that is now wrapped up, which Councillor Somerville and I went to the hearing in Dubbo for that. A report has now come out from that, and the government have got now 6 months to respond to that report. The New South Wales Productivity Commission review of funding arrangements for local water utilities, they're looking at different models to fund local water utilities moving forward. And also the Australian Productivity Commission Third Inquiry into the National Water Initiative. So that was the main part of with the JO board meeting regarding water relating to us. They also spoke about the energy projects, the water loss management project that's on at the moment as well within the JO. So, I don't know if Councillor Somerville or Councillor Rawson might add anything further for that meeting. I know it was your initial meeting there, Mr Chair, but just trying to build it. Obviously, you were exposed to how the JO board meetings operate, and we'll generally hold those on a quarterly basis.
Thanks, Kevin. My reflection on that meeting was excellent. It was good to meet and to discuss issues with other mayors and general managers across our region, which we think is always very useful to be in a space where we can do that. We don't have voting rights on the JO, but we certainly have access and have the ability to speak out our mind at that forum, and we're also ex officio on the on their water policy or water portfolio committee, which is which I've had a couple of meetings with them already. Interestingly, what has been good about those meetings is that we've been working our way through the key messaging on water policy for our area to come from the JO, and I've managed, even in the first two meetings, to get a few changes made to those key messages, particularly to bring in environmental issues into the messaging that we want to come out from the JO, and that seems to be getting a lot of traction with them, with the other mayors and general managers on that committee. So that'll go up to the board, so a few changes to the key messages. The aim there is to say that we're not just, or the JO is not just chasing water for water's sake, for business and community in that sense, but also for environmental reasons. And I think politically that's going to work well with the current state of federal government. So there were certainly a few nods around the room, but that's a good sign.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, it also aligns, as you touched on, with the state government policy at the moment, with environmental flows or water for the environment. So if we're speaking the same language, that definitely helps us moving forward for advocating for our projects, in particular the augmentation of Lake Rollins.
Thanks, Gavin. A mover and a shaker. So I should have done that at the beginning. So the recommendation is Council receive a mayoral report, including minutes for the Central New South Wales Joint Organisation Board meeting held 29th February 2024 at Condoblin. I have a mover. Councillor Nash, seconder. Councillor Ewan. All in favour?
Aye.
It's carried, thanks. 12.2. Okay, the Bolivar Water Security Project update. Can I have a mover? The recommendation is there that the council make the Water Security Project update report. So if I can have a mover.
Aye.
Councillor Cook. Seconder. Councillor Best. Okay. Gavin.
Yes, through Mr. Chair. This is just an update on the Bolivar Water Security Project. As all councillors are aware, we're very pleased to hear the joint funding announcement on the 28th of February regarding the $7.7 million by the state and also federal government water ministers. We have since had this confirmed, which is even better news, that this is actually new money. So it's, we thought that because the project had already commenced a few years ago, that a lot of the money would have already been spent or allocated. We were advised through our recent online meeting with the new project team that this is actually new money, so that's fantastic news. So progressing with the Bloody Water Security Project, once again they've reiterated the scope of developing the final business case. So they're looking at raising the wall at Lake Rollins by that 2.2 metres, a new pipeline between Lake Rollins and Carpore Dam, building a new dam 2.5 kilometres downstream of Lake Rollins, and then they've also got a fourth frame of operational rules for the inter-regional pipeline connecting Globula and the Macquarie Valley. So with that, looking at that as being the transfer of water through our existing 61-kilometre pipeline with Orange as part of this project to help out much larger water utility, ensuring that we've got the water for our own customers first, but having that extra water security will definitely help the region. So, and moving forward with the project, we had an initial online meeting with the new project team back on the 27th of March. We're just in this planning stage of having another follow-up meeting to that over 2 days. The project team is going to come out to Central Tablelands Water and meet with us at the office, and then also do some site visits out at one at Lake Rollins and also at Carpore Dam. So that would be a great opportunity for us to provide them with all the information that we've got on Lake Rollins and the project work that's been done today, as well as stress to them our strategic objectives which Council have developed as part of the MOU development and the workshop we had the other day, to push that, to let them know that this is what CTW wants out of this project.
So they've seen our strategic objectives?
They haven't as yet, no, but they will be seeing that. So it was a big push to get them to meet initially. We got half an hour online, but these two days will be vital to get that message across. So. They have got a lot of information already from the previous work that was done from the former project team. So we're looking forward to working closely with them to make sure that our objectives are known and are achieved throughout the project.
Yeah, I would have thought it's important to, having settled our objectives, to get back to them early in the process before they, which they're probably doing right now, getting into the project, working things out. Mm. They've got their own view about what they want to do and why they want to do it, what the outcomes they're looking for.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of assuming something from our point of view.
Yeah.
Sooner we get our objectives before them, before they start formulating their own ideas, it becomes much harder down the track to say, didn't you know that we were looking for this?
Yeah. Well, we can definitely send them to them before this meeting, and it's in early May, looking at the 7th or 8th, 7th and 8th of May. So
that's 3 weeks away.
So, and I actually thought that is important.
Yeah, no, we can send that, we're happy to send those to them. But it'll be really good when we sit down with them for those 2 days, they have that information gathering process as well.
Because, I mean, when you meet with them, if they've got any issues about what we're looking for, and they want to say, you know, you're joking, we can't do that, or can you explain what you mean by this, or whatever it might be, there's an opportunity to refine what we're looking for out of the project.
Mm. Yeah. But they did say to us too on the online meeting, even though the media release said that this project will be, a fine business case will be completed mid next year, they were more realistic, saying that it would be more like over a 2 year period to have this fine business with all the work they've got to do. And now that this funding is new funding, there'll be a lot of extra work that they can do to achieve.
They've appointed a project manager. Who's a consultant, so we got to meet him in this meeting online. So he'll come out. He's actually from Brisbane, isn't he?
He's
from
Brisbane.
So that's his primary role for the next couple of years, I suspect. We'll be looking after this project. So he'll be coming out in that 2 days. In fact, they've expressed a wish for a few of them to come, including the project manager. Project director. So we'll have an opportunity. We did cover in that meeting. We did cover a few key issues about what we were after. There's also plenty of documentation from the previous iteration of this project. There's a pretty good understanding of what we are after, what we want, what we need. There are a few extra things that popped up that I want to inject into the mix. Such as, you know, if this happens, if we do get an augmented dam and we get a pipeline, you know, what are the costs, what are the fees and charges that we might have for passing water from Lake Rollins across to Carcorp? I want there to be a charge for that, so we're actually selling the water to them. And that negotiation will have to happen at some point down the track.
But that's an issue we've raised with them right at the early stages, Kevin will remember. Yeah. Even before we were talking about augmenting the dam, when they were talking at the pipeline, the issue came up about the financial aspects of the water.
I think
there are various notes and memos and emails about all that already.
Yeah. It'll be advantageous for us, I think, because the net result is going to be more water coming from Lake Rollins to Carcorp rather than back the other way. There will be the occasion where we may need to tap into their water to support our system, but it's going to be rarer than the water flow going from Lake Rollins to Carcorp. So it would be advantageous for us financially, and Peter will attest to that. If we are actually able to not just a peppercorn rent sort of situation, but there is actually a business case financial relationship, so we're actually selling it. It'll be at a reduced amount, presumably, but even so, if we're going to be passing our water across into their system, what are they going to do with that water? They're going to sell the water. They'll sell it to irrigators, they'll sell it to Cadia, they'll sell it to wherever. So they're going to get a financial benefit out of it, so we may as well. So I'm hoping that sort of discussion is going to be happening.
Yeah, that'd be all part of that.
And I agree with Councillor Somervale, that sort of thing needs to be right up front. This is our expectation. Our expectation is we are going to sell you that water.
They've pushed back on that already.
Oh, different group of people will try it again, you know.
Is
they
Carra or
they
Clays?
They just Water New
South Wales. Water New South Wales, yeah. In this case, these people weren't from Water New South Wales. They were from Deachin, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the department. Whichever one is to the latest, you know, it's Deachin. And there's, the other thing to keep in mind is there's two DCEs. It's the exact same acronym, DCCEEW or something. Yeah. There's one for New South Wales and one for the federal government. So when we're talking about DCE, it's got to preface it with a, with New South Wales or, yeah. So you'd think with a long and unusual acronym like that, that would, it would have to be just the one agency. But in fact, no, there is both state and federal. Same. Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. Yeah. Any comments? Any further questions, comments about that? Councillor Cook?
The only thing I would ask, and this is just being mean, you know, anyway, the aspect of water security for the next drought, and we keep pushing this out, is that a consideration that we need to keep in mind that, you know, obviously, the building of a dam or maintenance of a dam will take a while, but we're spending so much time since the last drought, so let's improve before the next drought, and every year we take in thinking about it, we're getting closer to the next drought.
Come on, that's really, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the question. Councillor Cook, I think we've been, unfortunately, Noel's not here today, but the systems we've put in place since the last drought will definitely help CTW get through the next drought, as in linking up with the bores. We've been bringing water back from Goolagong to Canoundra. We've got a pipeline now, in, a bi-directional pipeline in with Orange, as well as with Cowra now. Cowra didn't go on any water restrictions during the last drought, so we know they've got a great source there that we could pump that we get tapped into for our lower end of our system. So I think with the next drought, which we all know is probably just around the corner, we're in a much better position than what we were leading up to the last drought. That will help hold us in good stead. And in the meantime, we're pushing and making traction on the Lake Rollins augmentation project. And we all know it's going to take, it's obviously going to take time and money. So as long as we're getting this traction, we are moving forward. That's one of the things I was disappointing in actually leading now, because I can see we are making that traction, and we've got to do something. It's got to be something else to do that. But I think in the interim, with the measures we've got in place now, will hold us in good stead going through the next drought. I understand next drought is most likely going to be longer. Who knows? But
I was just thinking it's the other side of whoever's writing the business case. That to me is a priority. Like, you know,
yeah.
You're thinking we'll take more time, but it's like, actually, you know.
I absolutely agree with you. They're taking time because it's more realistic. I mean, I think we all looked at the announcement from the ministers that that this project was to be finished within a year. It was utterly unrealistic. I'm happy to spend $7.7 million in a year on these sort of projects, because when you think about what has to happen, you know, environmental impact assessments, cultural heritage impact assessments, you know, the full financial business case of all of these options, all those things. I mean, you're just not going to get the consultants together in time to be able to do it within a year. It's just not possible. So a two-year time frame was just more realistic. As long as I don't think they're dragging the chain. I just think they've just made it more realistic time frame. But I certainly agree with you. There is pressure within our community to make sure that we are drought resilient. There's lots of different water security projects going on. In Gabon, for example, there's also we're looking at more water security just for Molong. There's CGW is involved in that mix as well because of the other project, the sub-regional water security project, is a potential component of that. There's a number of our councils are involved in a drought resilience or drought risk reduction project being run through GHD and CSIRO, which your council, Wedding, would have are involved. So that's happening at the moment. The survey workshops, that sort of thing, yeah. So there's a lot of work happening in the drought space at the moment, which is good.
One other slight twist to that is if we can get the project approved and ready for construction, I think the dam wall raising project showed is that you really can't do any serious dam wall raising with a full dam. Mm-hmm. I don't know what percentage full it needs to be, but I think it'd be impossible, if the dam were full, it'd be impossible to raise the wall. So rather than release water, if it happens to coincide with a, not a severe drought, but a sort of a semi-drought, that would be good.
It's one of the reasons why I think the pipeline is more likely to occur first. I mean, it would be up to the business case to determine that and the engineers to determine that. But we may have to rely on transferring a lot of our water across to Karkor and get the water level as low as possible before getting into the construction, and then to receive it back again. It won't be going back into Lake Roland, so I think the idea is for it to bypass Lake Roland. So we won't ever be putting water from Karkor back into Lake Roland. It will be back into our system to go through our filtration and treatment and so on, but not back into Lake Roland. Lake Roland is sacrosanct, is it not?
Yes.
Thanks for that. Any other comments? Questions? No? Thank you. So I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. 4.3 is Council Resolutions Update Reports. Can I have a mover? Council Cook. Seconder. Councillor Nash. The recommendation is the council note to the council resolution update report to February 2024. Gavin, would you like to speak to that?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair. I'll just go through the list here. It's only a smaller list, but the first one, the levels of service report. I know Ben and Noel spoke to this at the last meeting. Just for the progress with the stock forms, the Canoundra Network, water network operators are currently trialling the first stock form that's been developed, and another two forms are currently being created. So we're trialling the Canoundra area for the guys to get used to the soft forms and gathering the data. And then once they find out all the bugs, then they'll train the other staff throughout our water supply network. That's moving forward, which is really, really good to capture that data and to be able to bring it back into the infrastructure data system that we've got. The next one, we'll just mention about the Bloody Water Security Project and the strategic objectives, as Councillor Somerville mentioned previously. I'll give those strategic objectives to the project team before the 7th and 8th of May. But obviously we'll also send a copy out to the councillors as well, so they're up to date with the outcomes of that workshop. The deed with a neighbouring property owner at Lake Rollins. I received that yesterday from the Sudan property owner's solicitor, so that one should be able to be completed by the next council meeting. That should be finalised, which should be good to get that one done. And then that last one was just the project management policy methodology, and also the use and benefits policy that went on public display after the last council meeting. We haven't received any submissions. I know there's a report going out to this council meeting. So the gifts and benefits policy is now adopted, whereas the project management policy and project methodology, council asked at the last meeting for that to come back after it had been on public display for further discussion. So it'll be considered
later in this
business paper. Questions?
Questions? Comments? Councillor Somerville.
The follow-on of the discussion we just had about the water security project. At the moment, we have this sort of almost defunct. Now we had an MOU with the original project team, and the intention was we would have a delivery deed, and they backed away from that and said, no, we'll just leave it at an MOU.
Yeah.
But you can strengthen the MOU if you want. That was where they stood. Now it's a whole new team there now, I know that. One thing we need to get clear when we meet is what contractual arrangements there will be between the government, whatever part of the government it is, and CDW about what we're supposed to do, what they will do for us. The equivalent today in current circumstances of what was going to be a delivery deed. So I think an item on the agenda for your first meeting needs to be what documentation will there be with CDW almost before the project gets going, so we know what we've got to do and what they're doing for us.
We brought that up at that meeting.
And also the steering committees, obviously we want to be part of the steering committees, the working groups as well, represented there, and so we've got to...
We're going to keep the pressure on them to have a steering committee. We are on the steering committee, the working committees, etc. So we'll go through that discussion in detail when they do come out. But we certainly flagged it in that initial meeting. Hopefully they'll agree.
What I got from that, I know it was only 30 minutes or 45 minute meeting, but they did seem very receptive and to work in close collaboration with us.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the Lake Rollins is our asset, so they're keen to obviously get to know Lake Rollins and obviously work very closely with us, and I think keep that going exactly from the start will make a big difference.
I noticed also that there's a on the their website, our project, that project is flagged on their website. There's a web page for it, for the project. So you can go and have a look at that. So it's New South Wales Government Department of, because it's BTU. Okay. Under the water, if you follow the links down through water and then various regional projects, I think it's under that. And a lot of the water security projects, so it indicates what they're intending to do. And one of the things that's quite prominent in that is their aim to be to do these projects very much in collaboration with their regional stakeholders. So it seems to be one of their things that they want to work with us, not, you know.
This item, you know, being in collaboration with Orange, bringing in there, I think that's helping the case, because it's such a big city now. It's so big. And I think that is helping our case.
Yeah.
There's certainly been representations being made to the minister from Orange and Bathurst, in particular councils. And yes, you're right, that political push has been useful. Yeah.
And
thanks, Gavin.
Yeah.
Thanks, Councillor Somerville. Any other questions or comments on that? I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. That's carried. Moving on. 12.4, Financial Matters Investment Report as at 31st of March. Can I have a mover? Councillor Best and Councillor Cook, second. Thank you. Information in relation to Council Cash Investments be noted. Peter, would you like to speak to that?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, yes. Basically, in the broad economic sense, there's always barriers to what movement's going to be in interest rates. And there's many experts that say it's going to be by the end of the year, and some are arguing that it's going to be into 2025. There was an anticipation that interest rates would start to fall in the United States and in the United Kingdom or whatever, but they've been slowly fall. And expected due to the inflation. Inflation proving to be a little bit more resilient, or to use the economist term, sticky, as it's sort of hanging on. Hanging around for a little bit longer. In Australia, unemployment remains pretty low. The economy, although it's slow, is still fairly resilient. The main factor for inflation has been in the services sector, where services, particularly insurances and rents and so on, are really quite aggressive in some of the pricing and so on. So overall, recently the interest rates have sort of, we did reduced a little bit, but then in the last few days the markets have actually priced in a little bit more in long-term interest rates because of the Middle East, the political issues and military issues that are happening in the Middle East and instability there. So it's really an uncertain time. But in practical terms, in terms of our term deposits, we're finding now that you can still get around the 5% mark for 12 months, but it's getting more and more difficult. So there's sort of a little, the rates are tending to go down. Some of the shorter term rates, there are some specials there in shorter terms for 6 to 9 months where you can get a little bit more over 5% than what have you. So even the major financial institutions are finding it hard to know exactly how to read the situation. And the Reserve Bank has said that they wouldn't hesitate to raise again if they felt that inflation was become an enduring problem. There's some inflation figures out today, the monthly inflation figures out today, they're saying it's going to be around 3.4%, but that's what they're predicting, so it'll be interesting to see if the market gets that right. But basically, we're basically still operating on that 4 month term. That's our maturity rate for what we're working on. And we're still getting around that 5% mark, so it's still a much better return than it was 12 to 18 months ago when the cash rate was about 0.1%. So it's still, the market is still pretty sound at the moment.
Thanks, Bert. Are there any questions about that? Councillor Cook?
Just one quick one. On your graph sheet, so that I don't know what it is. There's one at 1.93. At first I thought it was a typo, but then I'm looking at it now and it's got at call. So it isn't got the much lower because it's at call.
It's much lower because it is at call, yes, it's 4.65%. It's an at call account with Macquarie Bank. We were finding at one stage with at call facilities, Macquarie Bank was paying much superior rate to the Commonwealth Bank. With the bonds, you can see now the bonds is at 4.35 and Macquarie is at 4.65. So it's still marginally better with Macquarie. The handiness of having it in the bonds is that administratively it's easier to handle, but that's the reason, because the funds have been at call with Macquarie. And we're leaving $200,000 in that facility, so we can use that facility again if we have to,
And I'll just admit, I was being wrong. I was reading that as the percentage, the interest rate, not the percentage of portfolio. That's what I was like, oh.
But it is a lower percentage too, in fairness. It's 4.64%.
No, I was looking at the 1.339.
So, it's a fair question.
I had a bond moment too, because I noticed that as well, but I realised it was 1.93%, but I, across the right you see the short-term deposits and the call deposits of 1.271, but on the chart, the table on the left, it's 1.071 is the call deposits. And I'm thinking there's a discrepancy there of 200,000. Where's the 200,000 coming from? And that's it. That's where it was. So at least we're looking. That's the important thing. We're looking, checking, and yes, it all makes sense. All right. Look, thanks so much for that. I'm just wondering where the 0.02% has gone. Which pocket is that going into?
0.02%.
Oh, there's a 99.98% at the bottom there.
Oh, okay.
It's a rounding up. I am kidding. It's just a rounding up. But thanks so much for that, Peter. That's great. And it's good to have you keeping a really close eye on these investments. It's brilliant. Really appreciate it. I'll put that to, unless there's any other comments or questions, I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Carried, thank you. 12.5, IPNR. The recommendation here is that council endorses the following draft integrated planning and reporting plans and place the plans on public exhibition for a period of 28 days. We have the operational plan and also the long-term financial plan. Peter or Gavin? Peter, who's going to speak to this? Oh, sorry, do I have a mover for this? Councillor Somervale, seconder. Councillor Cook, thank you. Comments?
Very good, Chairman. I'm happy to speak to it.
Okay, thank you, Peter.
Yeah, it's been another difficult process. We did cover off on a lot of these issues at the budget workshop. But I realise that even though I sent out the workshop presentation, probably some of the councillors were not in attendance, may not be aware of some of the issues. But structurally, we've got those issues again with our number of connections and our distance between connections and the amount of assets that we need to hold to actually generate income. And our assets are reaching a stage, you know, particularly trunk mains and combined treatment plant, where they're reaching the end of their useful life. So we're entering that decade of where we're going to need to do some major renewals. The other issue, of course, is the issue of Lake Rollins, where we had a workshop on the objectives of our objectives in relation to the water security project, which we spoke of again this morning. And we decided we really don't know what the capital cost is going to be, and we really don't know what funding is going to be offered. And we agreed on a capital cost of $40 million. And basically, in this model, it's funded, the $40 million is funded $1 million from reserves, $5 million from loan, and $34 million from a grant from another city of government. So that's the way it's been modelled in this occasion, which is a significant change from the previous years. The previous plan, I think, would have been capital costs, I recall, of $18 million. So that's a big sort of big adjustment there as we move forward. So the challenge of the plan, as well as some of the structural issues in relation to the number of connections that we have, is providing for this augmented infrastructure being created in Lake Rollins, and also renewing some of our trunk mains as well, which are now reaching the end of their life. And bearing in mind that some of the trunk mains may be part of the relationships with other local water utilities, there will be an aspect of augmentation involved in that as well, where you may have a 250, you'll get a 300 or 350, and there's additional costs involved in that as well. In an operational sense, the 24-25, the fees and charges, we decided to increase the availability charge by 7.35% or $20 per annum for a 20 mil connection. That gives us more resilience in our income base, and that certainly will help us in periods of wet conditions or times when we have to put extensive restrictions in place as well, the restrictions that have been in. And we decided to put in increase the usage charges by 3.13%. Originally, I was looking at a lower figure, given that we were increasing the access charge by a significant percentage. But I just thought we just needed that little bit of extra income to help us through the next decade. The overall effect of a residential bill with 140 kilolitres annually is $36.80 or about 71 cents a week. So it's a fairly modest impact overall. Maybe, of course, the access charge will apply irrespective of the level of consumption. So that's the way we frame the income side of it. The developer charge is just went up by 4.2%, which is as per the development servicing plan, where the index that applies in the development servicing plan is the Sydney City CPI, which is slightly different to the All City CPI. The All City CPI was 4.1% to December. This one's 4.2. The key features of the operational budget is we've got some salary and wage costs coming through, and many councillors will be familiar with the award. The new award came in last year, and it has some fairly healthy increases in it, because it was actually negotiated at a time when inflation was running quite high. So they've got to feed through the system. There's a 3.5% increase in the award rates, plus there's this new concept in the award of a bonus to be paid to every employee of $1,000 if you had 4 months, greater than 4 months service at the council in which you reside at the time. So that had to be factored into the process as well. Plus the superannuation guarantee is going up by 0.5% to 11.5%, which is the second last increase of the 12% the following year, 25-26. And I understand, based on present federal government policy, that will be the last increase in the superannuation guarantee of this last number of increases. Insurance is property and professional indemnity insurance. That's always insurance in a difficult area at the moment. Difficult in terms of now you end up with renewal questionnaires that are multiple pages because underwriters are very nervous of disaster events or some events occurring and impacts them. So it's expected to go up by 7.5%. Cyber security, it's a really active area as well. We have a $1 million cover for cyber security incidents. Projecting that component of the cover will go up by 20%. Chemicals, I consulted with our water quality manager, he said we're probably looking for 5-6% there. And I consulted with our storm and network operator, he said that the valves and water pipes and so on are about 6%. We've also got elements like external water costs, which are going up 18% this year. So I put in 6% for next year, but really, you never know what's going to happen in that area. There's a lot of pressure from the audit office in that regard. There's a few one-off items which it's unfortunate that Nummels couldn't make it today because he's probably got more in the knowledge of these than me. But there's a $250,000 amount for a reservoir leakage prevention program. And there are some reservoirs that must have minor leaks that we're going to do a program to fix. And that ties in with the leakage prevention project or the water loss project, the loss management project that's discussed later in the report. So there's $250,000 there. There's an additional $250,000 for capital as well for an actual coating of the reservoirs, and that's supposed to extend their life. We've done a few reservoirs previously, and that's worked out quite well. The other topic is the aerial mapping, and Ben has been working with the JO and a number of councils about updating all the aerial photography around the area so we get a better understanding of the property, the development areas and so on in our system. That's quite expensive. I understand from Ben that the JO is still sort of negotiating, trying to get the best outcome there for the participating councils. So put a provision in there for that. Near road water cycle management plan, that's something that we've been working on in terms of how that's to be presented now. We've got the new regulatory assurance framework rather than the best practice framework. The regulatory assurance framework's got 106 different regulations that we're used as a guide. So we've got to work through that through WCM concluded. And one of the things that the general manager has indicated is that we'd like a salary system review as well. The current system was introduced in 2019. Historically, the life of the salary system is 5 to 7 years. That's what the experts have told me. So it's coming up to that period anyway, so that we've got a provision in there for that. So we've got some operational expenditure there, all items that have come in there that won't recur, so they won't be going into future years. In the capital area, there's an extensive capital budget there of about $95 million over 10 years, which of course includes the $40 million for Lake Collins. We've got about $600,000 put in the next 2 or 3 years altogether that we have available for hectares, it's an additional 340k over 2 years, so it'll give us around 600 out of available. We need to do some work on our depots. Our depots do need some work. So mm-hmm. Man's been working, asset office has been working and trying to determine the best pathway forward there. Truck lane U, yeah, the critical 7 kilometres of truck lane U, the critical point that Noel's identified, which is critical from a pressure and gravity feed point of view. Hopefully that'll come in 24-25. Another item that's been added in that the Director of Operations asked to be put in was the creek underboards. Council would be aware that we had that incident at Jack's Creek. We had a major emergency with the water supply there because it failed. There's a number of other, there's four other underboards on that main system, which Noel has said present a risk, potential risk of failure. So he asked if we could put in $250,000 over each year over 4 years to have a program of trying to replace those. The Western Archery project, basically, that should be Western Archery.
Bows and arrows.
That's 300k. Most of that should be finished in 23-24, so that expenditure should be incurred this year, so probably in the next year. And the reservoir resealing and crossing program should be caving program, I'm sorry about that. And caving program at a cost of 250, that's going to be running in conjunction with the reservoir leakage program, so there's $500,000 there for work on reservoirs for leakage prevention and to extend the life of those. There's no new loans planned for 24-25, there's 10 million of loans planned for 26-27 to 32-33. There's 14 million shown in the capital budget, 4 million of that we probably won't have to draw on. But really that's something that we'll have to assess obviously as we move through the course of the decade and get some of those projects done to see how we actually travel with those projects and see that see how they go compared to the estimates we've got in there. But with the major, with the Western Archery project, which hopefully is finished this year, we should have a better understanding of Trunk Lane U, Trunk Lane C, to see exactly what they, and Trunk Lane A, I think as well, has been considered, to see what they're going to cost and the design work will be done on those as well. So basically, it's a pretty challenging environment in which we operate. But certainly, given that we've had some very low years of water usage, we have to be desperate and lucky to have four in a row. And historically, that's unprecedented. Certainly, I've looked at 23 years of records in that period, and that would certainly be something that hasn't occurred in that 23-year period. You can often get two. Exceptional to get three, like we've got this year. It'd be extraordinary to get four. But in saying that, the Bureau of Meteorology now is sort of, they're backtracking a little bit on what they're saying is going to happen with El Nino and La Nina and so on. So we really don't know. It's a difficult thing. We do know we are getting a small increase in our assessments. We get about connections, so we generally get about 0.4 next year, which is around 30 to 35. So that certainly will sort of help in our favour as well. But, you know, it's a challenging environment in which to operate, particularly as a water utility when your water sales are under significant pressure.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? I could see the council's
comment. I'd love to see a business case done for Central Chamberlain's Water on the effect of role of war is going to have on our income. You know, like, I know it's terribly hard to predict, but obviously we've got more water to sell during those dry times where everyone's, like I said, they don't have their tanks filled, they're going to be purchasing more of us and all those sorts of things. So it's definitely going to have we talk about $40 million, but you'd be interested to do a sort of calculation on what we expect to be the revenue to come from that sort of thing. we sort of, you always gloss over every day thinking about it in some ways, but yeah, that's one.
I guess that's a valid point.
It's hard to do because
that could be a scenario that could be looked at. I would need some assistance to actually do that modeling to actually get those assumptions in place. But certainly one of the things that we're talking about as a stakeholder in the global water security project, one of the things that we need for is to have less water restrictions. And so that certainly would work if working in favour. So that's something that could be we could consider that to try and see if we could get someone to
be
modelling in that at some later stage.
If they could incorporate that into the $7.7 billion business case, that would be a business case on our financial security going forward as well.
Okay. One could argue it's something that we might want to keep under the table for a little while. Because, I mean, the reality is that the augmentation of the dam increases the gold in the bank for us in a way. It's because we deal with water. The water that's in there is equals value to us. The amount of money that we get into our literal bank is determined by consumers' use of the water. So we don't necessarily want them to increase their usage just because we happen to have extra bit of water in our tank. Yeah.
But it will happen.
It will happen.
During the dry time.
Yes. But it's the issue that Peter's just said is, yeah, that if it stalls or holds back any sort of restrictions, then, yeah, we'll get gained financially as a result of that. But it's also part of the reason why I want to make sure that there is a financial relationship in terms of the water that we pass from Lake Rollins across the Cargill via the pipeline. That becomes a financial benefit to us.
Yeah. My main thing is the security of the water for our region, more than money.
We've still got to be viable, though.
Oh, I know. I'm just really pleased about the security aspect as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Security. Mr. Chair, just another comment regarding the economic benefits. I know that on the other side, during the drought, Bathurst Regional Council did a... Councillor Somerville, I don't know if you remember this, did an analysis or an independent analysis done on the economic effects of the drought. So if they ran out of water, what would that mean to their community? And I think it was quite a large figure, it was probably, I don't know, around $1 billion or something like that to the local economy if they couldn't provide water, showing young businesses. So you look at it from that perspective to say, okay, if we had that extra water, how could we help the likes of Orange? We've already got a pipeline in there. They're in the same boat, what would that mean to the region if we limited those amount of restrictions we have to put on because we've got the water there? Mm-hmm. So that would help as well.
And as a corollary of that is the opportunity that opens up by having that storage, the extra storage, it means that businesses that might want to move into the area can do so with a level of confidence. So we have some businesses that use a reasonable amount of water, and if they're not going to move into here, if they know that there's going to be downtime down the track, if we can say, oh look, we can provide you with secure water, then they're more likely to move in. So that's something to keep in mind.
And just on that opportunity side, looking at the housing space, the Regional Australia Development, the projections for populations of our regions, we're looking at redoing roads that will affect the connection we have. That's something probably to keep our eye on as well when that comes out.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, if you could pass me on some of that information, some of those links, because
still in the advocacy stage.
It's still in the advocacy, but it's critically needed. I mean. How many times have we had situations going back over the last 10 years or so where various government agencies have said, oh, well, the numbers suggest that you're not going to get increases in population, and so therefore you don't need these services. The reality is that we are getting increases in population over and above what the stats are saying. So yes, a redo of something like that is absolutely critical, because that then feeds into our ability to make strong arguments with ministers or X, Y, and Z infrastructure. Yeah. There's no doubt, I mean, climate change is going to be one of the drivers of net migration into the high country. But by definition, it will. It's getting hotter, drier, a little bit more difficult to live out in out west and north of us. So people, and already it's happening, people are moving up the hill, basically, up to where it's more secure around our regions. And that, so that has to be factored into what the population projections will be. If housing is going to drive those projection changes in the stats, then great, fine. But we need to follow on or tag along on all that.
Yeah, make sure that information.
Grab that information and use it. Yeah. Councillor Best?
Well, a question which I know that the director got here today, which is probably just that city advantage of the area mapping. I just see what the long term is. Like to pick up on leaks and things like that, you've got to deal with, you know what I mean, you've got to then continually do the aerial mapping business sort of differences and all those sort of things. But maybe that's something I can talk to the director about.
I'd be directly involved in that project, but I assume with the aerial mapping too, with the technology, you can get updates all the time where it will show you the change. I know that other departments use it, especially with tracking illegal use of water. They can see properties that are obviously terrific, dry in one period and they're totally green the next. But
yeah, I suppose, then you've got to continually.
Yeah, but I think with the updates, it depends on, I suppose, the licensing and what it is. But as I said, I haven't been directly involved in this, but I'll get more information and bring it back. I suppose there are opportunities for growth in the future too. So when we're looking at redesigning our pipelines or putting in new infrastructure, where are the opportunities as in, is there going to be any further development potentially around Grenfell, around Blaney? So you take that into consideration too when you're doing your planning for renewals as well. So that maybe I'm just thinking what the project could be.
I think Paul's point's a good one about water sales, which effectively means we're a bit conservative after the first 3 or 4 years with sales. We've included the cost of augmenting the dam and the borrowings and whatever else we need to do and the depreciation. We haven't factored in any uplift in sales because we're not on restrictions as quickly and all that sort of stuff. So there's a built-in conservatism in the income projections at the back end of the long-term forecast, which is good. Just a couple of points from there. This is just a fact, nothing to do with the numbers. The creek underbores and the creek crossings, the comment is creek underbores to be replaced by creek crossings. I thought it was the creek crossings that were being replaced by underbores.
I was going to ask exactly the same question.
Okay, because that's from Jack's Creek. We had a creek crossing that got washed away, and we had to underbore, and we've got another 4 or 5 of them.
Yes.
Is that right?
That would be correct.
And it's not just in your commentary, but page 72, we should correct this on the plan that goes public.
Yeah.
On page 72, there's the same description.
Yep.
Just clarity on what is
involved. You said creek underbores to be replaced by creek crossings. It's creek underbores to replace creek crossings.
Yes, I'll clarify that. Originally, we'll go back 2012 when we had the floods that came through, and they were creek crossings. They went across the creek. They got washed away, so we did the 5 underbores. Went under. These now are considered, where we did at Jack's Creek, it's a creek crossing. So it's not going under the river, it's going through the river, concrete encased, strengthened, and it's going actually the bottom of the river, not underneath the river. So it's still as fast as a creek crossing as opposed to an underbore.
You would have thought underbores are safer from a flood.
Well, we had this one obviously fail, and this is the advice we've been given. That's what we did at Jack's Creek. And Noel would be better to explain this than myself. But it's still a creek crossing as such, it's not an underbore. So I assume they can access the, because a lot of the creeks are probably dry majority of the times, but with the concrete encasing, the size of the pipeline, the strengthening that they can do now, that must be the sense, I guess, what they've been.
I must say, I do remember that discussion in one of our last meetings.
Yeah.
About exactly that. Yes, it was. Yeah. I agree with you, Councillor.
It's not clear. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit of clarity on what that actually means, but it's really just a need to fix those crossings because the Jacks Creek situation has highlighted the vulnerability of them.
Yeah.
And that we need to spend money to fix those crossings. By whatever means is appropriate. Yeah.
One of the issues was that the quality of piping was used in their temporary repairs, not the scratch and such.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because they had a short period of time to replace.
Yeah.
They had a temporary measure in, but and then running over the creek, then they had to do the underwaters. But obviously, with experience with Jack's Creek, some of those underwaters are obviously vital to further connections.
Mm.
But as I said, Noel will be the director of the project. Explain that, but yeah. That's my understanding that they are still a crossing, but they're not an underwater going through the creek with the concrete encasing.
And presumably on bedrock.
Yes.
Concrete onto bedrock rather than a concrete casing over the top of alluvium.
Yeah.
So it'd have to be down at least digging down to bedrock and then encasing it in concrete at base. So, yeah, it sounds like a pretty strong strong way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Except one other question, comment, which we spoke about at the budget workshop. We rely on income from access charges and water sales, basically. So I sort of focus a bit on that. And we've made changes to our tariff for both access charges and for water sales. The total amount we're projected to get from our available charges and from our water sales is in the budget. In both cases, there's two components. There's for access charges, there's the number of connections, and then what we charge per connection. We've got no control over the number of connections. It depends on subdivisions and all that sort of stuff. Mm. We've got control over what we charge. When it comes to water sales, that's a function of how much water people use and what we charge per kilo. Again, we've got no control over how much water people use, basically. That's all the climate, no control. But we do have control over what we charge per kilo. So arriving at the projections in the budget, it's a mixture of how many connections and how much water we sell times what we charge for both of those. What I'd be interested in knowing is what the assumptions we've made about the number of extra connections, because that's the thing we've got no control over, but we need to know that whatever assumptions in there seems right based on what we know about development in our shops. And in relation to water sales, what assumptions in there about how many kilolitres we're going to sell next year, because that's, we can then test that against what we think might happen climate-wise. And at the moment, we don't know what assumptions you've put in there for the number of connections or the amount of water we're going to sell.
Yeah, well, about 3 years to change the current number of connections, I guess, last time we looked at it, 6,090. I think we've got 6,090 connections. I've always sort of been pretty modest on the growth factor for growth in connections. I work on about 0.5%, which is around, it's a little bit over 30, moving forward. In summing that, we had quite a bit of development, particularly around Lane area in 22-23, and a number of developments, and now we're finding that they're actually connecting. There's a lead time between them when they do development and when they connect. So that's starting to feed through now. We're starting to get a little bit of growth there. But in saying that, a lot of those probably are already connected, so it's probably not going to get major and we should get a major increase in development again, which I haven't factored in any major development. And with respect to the consumption, our consumption fees have been traditionally low. We don't have the consumption for this year in terms of year to date. The update, the final read will be done shortly. I understand it's an improved, it will probably be a little bit better than what we expected, which is a good thing. So it'll be interesting to see if we can pick up some of that water sales we actually adjusted the budget more previously. But I just don't have that budget.
In terms of next year,
in 2022-23, I think it was about 1.25 million kilolitres, or around that number, off the top of my head. But we certainly put that up to about 1.5 million, or a little bit over.
Because the council find it interesting or useful to know, just tracking back over the last 5 years or something, what our water sales have been every year and what we're projecting next year.
I've got records for 23 years, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's very useful.
We are factoring in a significant increase. Basically, to pick up some of that extra demand, particularly in the rural sector, maybe when it's not a, the tanks are low and so forth and that, because I've noticed particularly with the weather conditions that the demand in the rural section does drop off pretty quickly because they obviously get full tanks.
Yeah.
So they don't have to draw on the network as much. With our actual residential consumers, their consumption now, the average, I think, was about, I've used 140, but I think it was about 139. It was very close to 140. Yep. And that's still been declining a little bit. And the part of that has obviously been because of the wet weather, and they don't water their lawns, and they don't water their gardens, and so on. So you lose that bit of an element there. But there is a basic amount of water that a household would have to use for their basic living. So how much more downward pressure or reduction you're going to get in that average consumption, you wouldn't think it would come down too much more. You think it had to go on the outside in a dry year to pick up that extra. And that's what we're banking on to get us back to where we need to be. And if we didn't have those one-off items in next year, we'd probably make a small reschedule and make a small. We would have made a small surplus, but because of those one-off items, they're going to feed through, and we're not going to be able to cover them, I don't think, unless we get an absolutely exceptional consumption.
One other small question: the employee leave entitlements.
Yes.
658,000 per year. Is that backed up by, crunching the numbers on what all the accumulated leave is, and is that a bridging ditch amount?
Combined annual leave and long service leave would be around $950,000 in total. So they're based on total fees, but I haven't done a projection out to see at what time projected out to the future to say, okay, I think it's not this person.
It's
based on the current award.
That's basically the current award.
Current award, So it needs to be updated every year. The main problem was we've got 658,000 in there. Mm. That sounds like it's a bit light compared to what if we were totally providing for our entitlements.
Yeah.
That's a bit light on.
Yeah, we're not certainly not at 100%, no.
Yeah, which suggests we... I know you've got this program of getting people to take their leave to get that amount down.
Yeah, and certainly, if we get some long-term employees that believe us, we'll certainly get down. We'll probably have to use the predict, but that's when it sort of comes in handy, have that money available, so...
Exactly.
But it's not at 100%. I don't think... I'd be surprised if as many councils, I don't know for sure, would be running at 100% of their leave cover. When I say early come, I'm talking both long service and Angham.
Yeah.
But certainly you'd like to have your long service covered, which we certainly have covered.
There's probably some benchmark.
Yeah, I think there's some rule of thumb. It's usually around 30%.
It used to be, I think now they expect it to be a little bit higher because the workforce is aged a little bit more than what they were when that. It used to be 25 to 30% was considered to be satisfactory out of it, but ours is probably around 60 or 65%. It's certainly not 100%, but it's certainly not a bad level of cover to have there.
Well, by definition, if you need to use the 100%, that's the end of the organisation.
There's no stuff.
He's heading off to Europe.
That's all for me.
Any other questions or comments? No. This is going to be a couple of quick points. Just the 7 kilometre area of Trunkman U. That major capital expenditure. That's also critical for the sub-regional water security project. So that's why that's being prioritised. And I totally agree with that. And I was mentioning the car on the way down, there was we had a water security in Molong workshop in Gabon a month or more ago. And the DCHU people there recognised the fact that if we were ever able to link into that, into Molong, with a pipeline from Manildra or near Manildra across to Molong, we have to upgrade the Trunkman U. There's really no choice there. It has to be bigger and it has to be newer. So that's why that particular upgrade is being prioritised.
That presumably will come out of the sub-regional recommendation about all of that, come out of the sub-regional strategy.
It will, and also the main artery pipeline project that will include this option as well. This,
I mean, we're doing it anyway, though. That's the point, though. Whether or not it's, I mean, I guess we could wait and see whether or not there's some money being thrown at that project. To help us to do this work, but I think that we really need to do the work anyway. Yeah. It's a pretty critical component of a bit of an uphill that needs. I think Noel's been talking about it before. He's explained it all before.
Yeah,
there's a fair amount of pressure on that line because it's heading uphill, and it's the main line that goes up to Manildra, to Kidal, Cargo, so it's a pretty important trunk. And we went and had a look, didn't we? We went out on our way home from the workshop. We went and had a look at the Kanomadai and pump station, had a look at the countryside through there and sort of what it involves about doing that work. I had the same question about the underbores, but we've answered that. And that was all I needed to say. So.
Well, through you, Mr. Chair, I just want to acknowledge the efforts that Peter and Debbie, our finance officer, and also Cheryl put into the long-term financial plan and the operational plan. There's a lot of work that goes into that. It just doesn't happen overnight. So we acknowledge Peter and his team's efforts in doing that. And thanks, Peter. And the amount of analysis and thoroughness that you put into it, I'd like to acknowledge that.
I agree. Thanks, Peter. Thank you very much.
Just ask a question on the long-term financial plan. I'm just putting my wedding hat on.
Mm-hmm.
The corrigible seems to be, I don't even know now, I think it was 2026.
I think it's 26, 27.
I'm just a bit concerned that we sort of went to the community last year, and then we're going to be saying in 4 years' time, we might have a result. And how does that sit with if we do get the Lake Rollins augmentation in doing another project? Is there any possibility to bring it this way?
Well, it all depends on funding. But voting there has been totally dependent on the government grant funding. So the latest with the Craig Water Security Project, the letter went out from Wenchai to other potential connections. So we're waiting for those responses to come back. We're wrapping up the feasibility study to then go out to, we'll go back to the government to say, okay, we'll finish the feasibility study. We have got support here or we haven't. And the biggest thing is going to be about the willingness to pay within the township. But I'm trying to bolster that with the regional community out there wanting a reliable supply. So then we'll be advocating for funding. So it all depends on if we get that funding to do the project. We might even be a bit optimistic saying that it's going to happen in 25-26, but so it all depends on the funding. But then lining with Lake Rollins, the Lake Rollins project will be done by a lot of contractors. We could do the corrigible water supply with the majority of our staff. If it's just laying the pipe, the majority of the work will be laying the pipe on from the bore. Our guys do that every day. They've done Trump and K, we did that internally, so we could use a lot of our resources there to do that project. So, as well as with some contractors to get that done. So, I don't think it would matter too much if we'll have both projects running at the same time. But it all depends once again on the funding.
Yeah, only just because I know that 500 million is on the table at the moment, and I think that grant funding, the applications have to be in at the end of this month. So we sort of missed that opportunity for 500 million, which was for water assets, for housing.
But there's other opportunities out there at the moment, too, through the National Water Group Fund. We'll be looking at the next round has come out for that. Those opportunities, that may be the opportunity to go for that as well. Seeing this is going to be a straight, obviously, pipeline from our bore to the township, and doing the original or the existing connections, because it's not a new development out there at this stage. But once we have the infrastructure in place, that will give you another further opportunity to grow that town, to grow that area.
When we went to them and asked their opinions and sort of
always take shoes on.
Although that's one that might be a bit quicker, because it's not... It's,
it doesn't sound like
it's
a big job.
It's fairly simple compared to some of the other projects.
Project through road reserves. It's just about getting the community on board to say that they want it. And I've said it previously, before my time with Quandiella, I understand that they didn't want it. The new water supply or water supply there, but if you try to take it off, then obviously they wouldn't like that. So
yeah, I just can't understand why anyone wouldn't want it to have.
Yeah.
I think most people at the meeting they were positive other than that one lady in the end.
Don't
know. And I suppose a lot of them have probably spent a lot of money already being set up to be self sufficient, so or they want to pay extra for it. Supply until they realise the benefits.
Benefits of having the water just go straight past the pipe to turn the tap on.
It is nice.
Big benefit, yeah.
Thanks for that. Oh, Councillor Bess?
Yeah, my benefit is the local
minister is very giving and honest with the crack. Oh, right, yeah. Sure. And very supportive.
Very supportive.
Okay, if there's no other comments or questions, there's, you'll note there the fees and charges, that those increases and so on. We discussed all of those in a level of detail at the workshop that I think only Councillor Somervale and I attended. I think there was no other councillors there. But, we were pretty happy with the numbers that Peter was suggesting for those increases in fees and charges, but now's your last opportunity, well, not really your last opportunity, but an opportunity for you to comment or, whether or not that's enough or too much, or personally I think that an increase of 71 cents per week is quite reasonable. Peter's had to do a lot of balancing act there to try and get those increases. Noting the fact that even a 3.13% increase in the user charges, which is not a huge amount of money, but our operational expenditure is going up by many more percentage points, if you think of it that way. You know, it's barely keeping pace with inflation, and certainly within an area of an organisation which is involved with infrastructure, like such as ours, the costs of building, maintaining, etc., the actual increases over the last few years have been quite an excessive inflation. So personally, I think that those increases are quite reasonable, and I think can be managed by most people. So now's your opportunity to agree or disagree with that.
One question.
Cool. $8.90 for equivalent tenement. There might be a bigger missing
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should be set
up to fix that. Yeah, oh, right at the top.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So what should that be? The fee will be set at.
It was 6.89 now, 7.179, so I'd say it's just been.
Yeah,
7.179.
Thanks, Michelle. We're just making sure you're ready. Councillor,
why is it?
Because
you've
got
a dollar sign and a comma, 8.90, so there's a figure before the comma.
Oh, 7.6.
Yeah, you know, I'm the technical. I actually do read them.
It's mentioned in the heading. That section, but not, but yeah, but that's the type of.
It's not trying to pick on you, it's just getting it.
That's good. And we can, fix that up before you. We'll create that for you.
Of course,
I'm going to. Yeah,
right. All right, well, thanks everybody. If everyone's happy, I will put that. The recommendation being that. I'll go back to the recommendation. Council endorses the draft integrated planning and reporting plans and place the plans on public exhibition for a period of 28 days. The two plans are the operational plan for 24-25 and the long-term financial plan for 24-2034. I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Yes. Any against? No? It's carried. Thank you. Thank you so much, Peter, for all your hard work. Okay, we'll move on to 12.12.6. I'm finding it, bear with me. It's got to go past all of these. Here we go. Okay, policy review, project management policy and methodology. The recommendation is the council adopt the project management methodology and project management policy. Can I have a mover? Councillor Nash, seconder. Councillor Somerville, thank you. Peter, would you like to?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Jim, this policy and methodology will present to Council at the February meeting. Council at that time indicated that they'd like both to be put on a public exhibition, which we did set up on our website. Didn't receive any submissions. Council requested that policy and methodology be returned to them for a final review. And the issue around project value threshold for the methodology, it's currently set at $1 million. Council had some concerns about that threshold. So it's coming back to Council basically now to make a final decision on that aspect of the policy and methodology to discuss that. I know the Director of Operations Technical Service, I had a discussion with him around it. He was comfortable with $1 million and he felt that would work, and certainly when you have projects that don't have quite a great complexity or present a lot of risk, can be a bit onerous to actually apply that methodology to all those projects, low-value projects, but that's an issue that if people have some concern around it, we can certainly change it.
Thanks, Peter. Any comment or question? Councillor.
I suppose I'll follow up. I was the one who said originally I thought the $1 million threshold was a bit high. That's still a bit high, I think, but the issue really is the policy itself is, I think, over-engineered. It is a very detailed the methodology for both documents. What the project manager is, our new internal project manager needs to go through to meet the policy is very detailed, very complex for our little organisation. I would have rather seen a slimmed down methodology and a slimmed down map, but I've come to the conclusion that the requirements of the methodology and the policy are so detailed and so onerous that maybe $1 million is right, because if you're going to have to go through all of this detail for a small project, then that's a bit cumbersome. So I think, if I can summarise, I think the problem is the detail in the policy rather than the amount. I think we borrowed the policy from Parks, which is probably 20 times the size of CDW, and they've probably got a team of staff working on project management the whole time. And so it might be appropriate for them, but I think it's just a bit over-engineered for us. But having said that, it's been on public exhibition. We need a policy, so let's just get on with it.
Yeah, I agree.
My comment is that I've seen way, way more onerous ones for trying to get grant approvals in the academic sphere and universities. The amount of effort you've got to go through for project management is unbelievable and way more complicated even than this. I agree with you. It's a lot to go through, but we're dealing with public money in this instance, and so I think that the appropriate checks and balances need to be there. And I think $1 million is probably perfectly reasonable.
It's one of those blunt instruments, isn't it? When the reality is, it's about complexity of the project. You can have a project that's worth only $500,000 that is actually very, very complex, very complicated. And you actually need to have really strict controls over how the project is managed. Or you can have a $2 million project, or a $5 million project, which is actually really quite simple. For example, putting in a pipeline across the countryside, the actual job is understandable, relatively simple, but it's just the length of it that increases the value of the total project. So, what we're doing, what we've got here, is a relatively blunt instrument to try and firm up the way in which project management is done. So the actual threshold amount is perhaps not good. It's the blunt instrument, in a way, isn't it?
It's really, Mr. Chairman, this is something that we, project managers, I think, meet with. Mm-hmm. There's certainly something, certainly not straight away, but certainly something that he can have a look at, because he's got to work offensively with it.
Yes.
And if he's finding barriers to the effective movement through that policy methodology, then we'll certainly look to try and, as Councillor Sondal has indicated, to simplify it.
Mm.
To something that's a more user-friendly document. We can certainly do that after the project manager's been in place for a while.
Yeah, I think it's a good solution.
Obviously,
the
manager who's enforcing the project, the policy can't really change his own policy, though.
No, we can do it. Councillor Best? Councillor Best?
Oh, I was just going to say something. I agree with Councillor Sullivan's comments on it, and I think the director's comments prove that's what we should be doing, is going back to them for some input into the next review and do the review of it and make the changes there, as far as that. The other thing I would look at and think of the project sponsor, which always says it can be a council employee or it can be an external employee. Well, to me, that's the role of council. The council sponsor should be the role of the project manager sort of thing. So, it's just an extra role. Except, as you said, it's an extra layer on top of there, which is sort of going, it just makes it a bit more onerous, that's all. So, but I don't agree with
that. I think that was actually put in there because there could be a greater project that's being run by, say, the Water New South Wales or some other delivery person that's actually a council project, and public works or something, and that's why they made that little distinction there.
What we could do is modify the amend the recommendation to include a review in a year. Sorry? Should be reviewed anyway. Oh, that's indeed, you're right, within a year, within 12 months of a new council coming in, all policies have to be reviewed anyway. So we don't, you're right, we don't have to do that this time around. If we were doing, if we'd done it later on, we that might be more reasonable. Sorry.
If I treat Mr. Chair, just in the document control, there's a review due date section there, so we can put a date in there, say in 12 months' time.
Some input from the new project manager really important. I mean, in Blady, for example, we have a couple of project policy, so we divide up ordinary course of business, doing a road or a culvert or something, and stuff that's not ordinary course of business, like the swimming pool refurbishment or the equestrian centre or a subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
And you have different policies that apply to each. For us, replacing a trunk line might be more than a course of business, whereas Claude being reservoir wouldn't be. So that's enough. I mean, that's for later, but that's another way this could be approached.
Well, so we don't need to make an amendment. So is there any more comment, questions? I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. 12.7. And for our maintenance, 12.7, maintenance of council systems. Recommendations to council note the information in the general report. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Best and Councillor Nash.
Yeah. Is there an absence
of knowledge?
If there's any questions, please, if I can answer them, I will. Otherwise, I'll take them on notice.
No.
We're just with that, we're reading through it. 23 water meter changes since the previous reporting period, so that's either changing over due to, obviously changing over due to meeting the 7,500 kilolitres, which is under our policy to change over meters, or if we detect that the meters aren't reading accurately or they're broken or leaking, so they may not be repaired. The fluoride plant at Carcor is back in operation. That was repaired. We had to get a part, I think it was from Melbourne, so we finally got that part in, and now that's back in operation.
Any questions, comments? Okay, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Carry. Thank you. 4.9, Water Loss Management Initiative. Recommendation is the council note the information in the report. Can I move her? I have jumped over. 12.8. Sorry, 12.8, performance of council systems. The council note the information in the report. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Crook, Councillor Ewan. Sorry, I was seeing the hands dive up, I was trying to work out who was who. I was trying to decide who got the hand up first. Again, in Noel's absence.
So, through you, Mr. Chair, if there's any questions, try to answer them.
That looks pretty good. There's not that many issues on each of those locations. There's a few leaking services there that seems to jump up, but again, not out of the ordinary from what I can see.
Any
I think the interesting thing from this, which is pretty telling, is the improvement of all the villages. It's the leaking service measure, which seems to have the highest number of problems, suggests that the program to replace retic mains and trunk mains. Well, no, this is retic mains, isn't it?
Yes.
The program to replace the reticulation mains is shouldn't be delayed.
Okay. Any further comments, questions? No, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Right, carried. Now 12.9, apologies. From before, 12.9, Water Loss Management Initiative. Recommendation that Council note the information in the report. Can't move, please. My hands are dying into the air. Councillor Best. And a seconder. Councillor Cook, thank you. Okay.
Through you, Mr. Chair. And once again, it's a shame Mel's not here because this has been one of his pet projects, one he's been heavily involved in. So this is an initiative that was put CTW jointly, and it was engaged with the JO as part of this project. It was funding through the department, through DSU, for this water loss management project to try and minimise the losses in the individual councils' network. So it's not only CTW that's involved in this, it's other councils within the JO. Just to try and get a better understanding of, and especially for CTW, because we've got such a large network spread over a huge distance, and trying to find those leaks is very challenging at times. So with this system, they're putting in with various flow meters throughout the system and various pinch points. This will help us identify where those potential leaks are and to be able to repair and fix those as soon as possible. So with the CPW system at the moment, I was talking to Noel this morning, we've got, he's identified five high pressure flow meters to put in the system. It's a bit hard to see in that diagram there, but Noel also wants to do a presentation to councillors when he's well enough, and go through the telemetry system with the proposed where the proposed flow meters are going to go. So he's looking at putting five within the system, high pressure meters, and then also another 19 in low pressure areas. So that'll be over the next two years. So we've been successful in obtaining grant funding at this stage of around $58,500, and the human had been involved in this, but I think that was the purchase of 5 meters initially, and we're just waiting for those meters to, I don't think they've arrived yet, but once they arrive, we'll have those installed throughout our network. So basically this will be able to measure more accurately the water leaving the filtration plant and going along various trunk mains, but also to the reservoirs. We'll be able to do those calculations to say, okay, whatever's left the plant should be at the reservoir if there's no takeoffs in between, and vice versa, and then flowing on, pardon the pun, through the system from the other reservoirs, as well as weighing up, okay, we're calculating what was on the meter reads along the system as well, and then we'll be able to identify if we've got any losses within the system, or more accurately, we'll be able to indicate if we have got any issues in a certain section of our supply network. So, this has been a great project, especially for CTW. Noel's had a good relationship with the consultant too, that the department, JO, engaged through the department, and working out different methods in identifying those losses. And at various meetings, especially at the Water Utilities Alliance, Noel has been congratulated for the work, and also how advanced our system is with the telemetry and our network. So it does look complicated when you first look at that, but once it's explained fully, gives you a great appreciation of yeah, the guys that are out there in the field and also in the office, and our network manager in particular, our water quality manager and Noel, they monitor this 24/7. Mm. They're on call to monitor this.
On a roster.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's vital for the operation of our system. So there's grant funding of $58,000 so far. We've also got in there, as I said, the other meters that we're looking at purchasing. So 19 of
the low pressure.
Another $50,000 this year, as well as $50,000 next year for those meters. I think Mel said this morning that the high pressure meters are around $8,000 each, so they're not really cheap, but we'll get a lot of benefit now that having those meters in the system. Now, I assume they will last for a long period of time.
We only need 5 of them. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah. So, any questions? I'll take them on notice if I can answer them.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment that I think this is a fantastic initiative. It's really, really good. Explain why. And I think I'd like to see our performance against water loss targets and so on incorporated into our levels of service. And the reason for that is, if a customer has a water loss their side of the meter, we charge them.
Yeah.
If we have a water loss on our side of the meter, everyone pays.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's incumbent on us to maximise the amount of water we've got to sell and not leak. And so it's good to be able to tell our customers, we've got a policy that you're going to pay for leaks on your side unless you come within one of the exceptions. But don't worry, on our part, we're also doing everything we can to stop water loss on our side, because everyone pays for that. So to be able to incorporate some measure of how we're going on water loss in our own network is a really good thing.
Yeah.
So not only is it project, but I'd like to see it fit somehow into the levels of service we can afford against.
Yeah, that's great.
Good point.
Yeah.
I never thought
about that. Yeah. But it's a good point. Yeah, no, I would certainly agree with that.
I wonder whether, just so we don't lose sight of it, I wonder whether the recommendation could include the staff investigate incorporating a measure of water loss into our levels of service. I mean, maybe there's some reason you can't do it, but I'd just like to get that on the agenda.
So they
I don't know whether the councillors agree with that.
I wouldn't want to put in this, and I think this is a project in itself. Adding it to our levels of service, I think it should be separate. Just because this is this, and this is going to go to JOs and all the rest of it. Just let this project happen, and then what we do with the information, yes, you know, we can put in the resources, but I don't think it should be as part of this project. We'll just muddy the waters. Again,
I think David was suggesting what you're suggesting anyway. Yeah, I think you're in furious agreement. it's not necessarily something that, you know, is generated from this project. I mean, there would certainly be an ability to, you know, go back through the numbers and say, look, before and after this project, what sort of improvements have been made? But in terms of level of service agreements, they're a little bit more general in nature, and you know, we should be saying to our customers, we are doing all that we can possibly do, with the latest technology to ensure that there are no leakages in the system, which are then passed through as charges to everybody. So that should be just a given, you know, as part of the quality control of the organisation. Whether or not you need to spell it out in terms of an actual, this amount was improved by this project, I mean, that might be something that could go into an annual report or something like that.
I suppose what I'm thinking of is, in the case that you have a breakage, which happens, you're going to throw your own numbers out a lot and they're all bad. So you really got to be careful with what you're reporting to the public. Like, I get the idea, but if there is a break and we use a lot of water, then we also have to report that under that.
Through Mr. Chair, we also do annual performance monitoring and reporting, and one of those items is water loss. Yeah. Our estimate, in the past, obviously, it's been an estimation of our water loss throughout the year. So this will, once these blankets are in, will provide us with a more accurate estimation of that water loss, which will be reported, and it's public. It's public information that's coming out there as well. We could also gather that information and form, put that in with our levels of service, or to when we report it to our consumers, we can promote that to say that this is one of our key focuses.
In terms of reporting, I mean, that's the thing you would probably put into an annual report.
Put that in there.
This is what we've been doing. If we had the ability after this to put numbers to a specific, to the amount of leakage that's been improved or removed, then that's a nice thing to put into an annual report. But otherwise, I think, I think most people's expectations are just that we are doing our job properly and that we're making sure that any leakages are removed and that the general populace is not affected by that. I mean, most people are concerned about leakages because it's going to affect their actual day-to-day supply. Really. But it's a good point, David, that the concept
of being able to measure and report against it, whether it's levels, and right here and now, we're not the experts, we don't know. I wasn't suggesting we investigate, that's what I was keen on doing, but I'm happy just to leave it as we're going through how we measure this, and I'm sure there's industry benchmarks as to water utilities, water loss, it's clearly reported everywhere, to know how we're going compared to industry benchmarks, it's important, I think.
Yeah, and that will be, through the chair, that will be through the performance monitoring reporting as well as all the other water utilities. I don't know, I'll have to check if there's a benchmark, but I know in the past we had to put in an estimate of could be 15% or 20%, but we have to report on our losses, but this will give us about
a bit of an estimate.
Therefore, moving forward, we don't measure when we're flushing, do we? We don't actually measure the water usage when we're flushing.
I think we can, but we
I see the measures. If you're going to start doing that, we've got to start then measuring and then to allow it to calculate in the, how much is actually flushed and how much is actually
lost
coming as well. So.
We don't want to make too onerous for the guys.
Through you, Mr. Chair, I think the next meeting, or when Noah's well enough for him to present fully this work, and then he'll be able to answer your questions regarding moving forward with those benchmarks or reporting.
This is not going to stop water loss, this is going to measure it.
Well, it's going to stop it. It's going to stop or help alleviate it if we find a danger leak that we didn't know about, which is almost certainly what's going to happen. And then we go and fix it. Look, any more comments, questions? No. I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Thank you so much, and thanks. Thank Noel as well. That's excellent. Okay, so we have, before we move on to questions on notice, there's 12.10, which is that late item report that you would have been sent late report on the data breach policy, cyber security policy, and legislative compliance policy. Has everyone received that and had a look at it?
Mr. Chair, I apologise for that. I ran the report over the weekend on Sunday, and for some reason it didn't pick up this report within the business paper, so we do apologise for that. I think we have two authorisers on the report where we usually have one authoriser, and so it didn't pick up when we went there when it was processed. So. We apologise for that. This is one of the Chell's first reports as well. She's been heavily involved in our policy review and development side. So Rochelle, did you want to speak to the report at all? Or?
Yeah, so basically these three policies I have prepared is audit recommendations. And the data breach policy and cybersecurity policy will help the council to identify any eligible data breach and cybersecurity risk, and all the process is written in the policy. And for the legislative policy, it ensures that the council complies with all the laws. So the policy has all the details. And with the legislative policy, there will be a legislative register where we have to monitor like if all laws are complied by the council.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, I started looking at this early this morning. Mm. And the first thing that occurred to me is, do we need to deal with this now? I mean, it's a bit rich, really, to ask councillors on this 24 hours notice to approve three fairly detailed policies. And I started reading the legislative one just to see what that covers. Talks about compliance with legislation, statutory requirements, and common law, which is interesting. And then in the scope it talks about not only compliance with legislation, but also with contracts and funding agreements, which is a big issue. And then when you read the rest of the policy, we don't come back much to compliance with contracts or funding agreements, which is just a contract. And then I started thinking, should we have one of these policies? I mean, a tight little organisation like CDW, you know, we'll stuff up complying with legislation sometimes, and then we'd sort of say, you know, terribly sorry. If we've got a policy that says this is what you've got to do, you should do this, you should do that, you should do that, the chances of being able to say, oh, yeah, we're sorry about that, but we should have filed something by such and such a day or whatever it might be, you might get excused. But if you've got a detailed policy that says you've got a person in charge and you've got to register here and you've got a report on it, the chances of being able to, for a little organisation to be able to ask to be excused, it sort of cuts against the possibility of doing it. Anyway, I started thinking about all those things this morning, and then I thought, do we really need to do this right now?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take Councillor Somerville's inquiry in that regard. Yes, we do. The data breach, I'll deal with each of them, but the data breach policy is required by the Privacy Commission of New South Wales, and the requirement, and talking about breaches, the requirement was that that be in place and adopted by the 31st of December 2023. So that's something that is a mandatory requirement that we've got out there, and it deals with you know, the classification of personal information, how you protect personal information, if there is a breach in respect of privacy and personal information, how you deal and respond to that situation and try and mitigate the breach. The cybersecurity policy is something that's been on the auditor's recommendations for around, they've been on our case about it for about 3 years. It's been an outstanding item on the management letter, and it's something that they said that, that really needs to be acted upon. You need to have a formal policy to deal with that. Most councils do. Most councils have an in-house IT arrangement, which makes it a little bit easier to actually do that, and it would be something that would be put together probably by the IT manager. With us, we've got a managed service provider, Furia, who we work with closely, and I actually gave them the policy to say, okay, have you got any concerns about this, or because you would be heavily involved if we did get outside reach in the investigation process and the rectification process and so on. And they came back and said no. Some governments have what they call the essential eight, which is the ideal framework, maturity framework for dealing with cyber security matters. Council has some steps to take. We do have some steps we've got to take. I don't think there's any council that probably covers it all off to every requirement or all the way off. So that's the reason we're doing it at this meeting was basically because the interim audit is next month. And we did make a commitment, I made a commitment to them to say, okay, we'll get that to council prior to that visit. So that's, and I apologise for the fact that it didn't come out in the business paper, but that's the reason for the haste. Legislative compliance one is also a external audit recommendation. I agree 100% with Councillor Somervale. It's a lot of detail. You're creating a structure which you're going to have a high degree of compliance, but they're starting to sort of make it now that having a legislative compliance register is, or a policy to deal with it, is becoming a mandatory thing, particularly in terms of the internal audit and the audit ARIC committee bills and so on. Because the ARIC committee would like to see the legislative compliance register from time to time to see that you're, to get some assurance that the council is complying. I'm not going to say every time we're going to comply, but all the instances for various reasons where there may be non-compliance. Obviously, you look upon that in terms of the risk, what's the risk associated with that non-compliance and the consequences of it from time to time, that may occur. But once we're in the process of trying to develop that register and we're concentrating on the corporate issues and the corporate and governance issues at the moment, obviously you would also broaden that at some stage to bring in your account compliance under the Water Management Act compliance and your drinking water quality compliance and so on as well, just at least to acknowledge it on the legislative compliance. So that's the reason for the haste and that's the reason why we've gone down this path. Basically we've been encouraged or basically indicated that we need to do that. I think a number of these items were mentioned in the Auditor General's report to Parliament, particularly cyber security, where they said cyber security is not, council don't have a cyber security network policy, so you don't have a framework of how you deal if there's a breach, what you do, how you report it, what investigation process do you do, what's your cyber response team. Difficult in a small organisation like CTW to have a cyber response team. Basically, that would be me, the general manager, and your managed IT provider. That would be your response team. But it's just unfortunately a framework that we have to have in place. The other thing I would say is we'll put these as per the resolution. I'll be placed in public display for 28 days. More than happy to take any advice or any contribution submissions from the council over that period, and if we can. If we need to make tweaks to them, we're happy to bring them back in at the June meeting if council wants to resolve that way or wish to do that.
Yeah, except the resolution says it won't come back.
Okay,
well, doesn't it? We'll
Mr. Chair, I think you might have to accept the late report. You have to accept the
late report.
You just formally have to vote to
accept the late report. Okay, first one for me. So.
Because the outside of the legislation that we received at the same pace.
Yeah, that's true.
It's 3 days before. Yeah,
okay. Okay, interesting point. I hadn't realised that one.
Yeah.
Is there a mover?
I'll move.
Accepting the late like report.
Yeah.
So Councillor Nash, Councillor Cook seconded that. I'll put that. All in favour?
I think I'll oppose that. For the reasons I said earlier.
Oh, I think we need to get... I disagree.
Why? We've got 12. No, I won't. I'll support it.
Because I know the Eric, how the Eric really... So What would you say? They definitely want this.
They want us to not understand
something. And if we've got 28 days and we change that wording to we get it back, would you be happy there?
We're just accepting the late report.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, so we're just accepting the late report. We still haven't moved to accept, as in pushing through. We're just, at this stage, only moving to accept the report, not to endorse the report and to endorse the recommendation. So are you agreeing to accept the report?
Yeah,
all in favour? Yes. Yes, so that's carried. The report is accepted. That's something that should happen first.
Unanimous, yes. Thank you. Later report. I think the finance has actually already addressed these, but what came to my mind was that we weren't named in changing the audit report to Parliament. So that's a tick.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'll just make the point there that the threat was made to us that if we did not get a cyber security policy in place, that the next year we will be named in Parliament.
Yeah.
And they were very close to naming us in Parliament the previous year because it had been 3 years and they hadn't seen the policy crystallised.
Yeah.
So that threat was actually made to us.
But it's not there, so we're good. And the other one is, I was going to say, can we ask the ARIC to review the document and provide an assurance to councillors or an assessment to councillors, which would probably be for you.
When's the next ARIC then?
The next ARIC meeting, ideally they would have gone to ARIC first, we'll give you an opportunity. The next ARIC meeting is on the 5th of June, and it will be on the morning.
But we can still ask for them to have a look at it as part of their ongoing
work. Through you, Mr. Chairman, basically that would be within the 28-day submission period also. So if they have any concerns, we can take that into account, certainly take it as a submission if they wish to raise any issues with it. I will say, through you, Mr. Chairman, that basically these policies are pretty much standard type policies. We've tried to modify them to suit CTW or not. I've really pronounced it somewhere. If you can't make these things, try and make them to give you the term about the project management, about being over engineered, but you've still got to stay and have the core items there that they want covered in the policy to be there and to show that you're giving attention to those particular matters. So that's what we've tried, and we've these went through a number of iterations to get to this point, but we're more than happy to take on board any further suggestions. But I think council understands the basically the speed in which we have to sort of move in respect.
Councillor Best?
I have a question for the director then. As a budgetary thing, one of the overarching things of these policies is that council provides enough financial support to have, like the legislative one. So within our budget frame, have we got enough funds there to make sure we're compliant?
In the legislative compliance space, we haven't put any additional money in the budget for legislative compliance other than what you normally do as part of your operation budgets in other areas. We don't have any additional funds for specifically for legislative compliance. We do have a provision in our budget now for cyber security, our specific provision. I think it's around, for next year it's around $22,000. Because cyber security in New South Wales, we're looking for councils to set aside funds in that area. And that allows us now also to, if we need to engage cyber security in New South Wales, they generally don't charge a fee, but if they were engaged to do some penetration testing, external penetration testing, then we would have some money to be able to do that. But in terms of your specific question about legislative compliance, we haven't got any specific additional funding other than the government's officer that we've engaged as well to assist us in that regard.
That becomes an issue in some ways. We're now saying we're agreeing to a policy which is it's our responsibility to make sure that there's plenty of funds to actually carry out all those legislative requirements. So if we...
Mr. Chairman, basically, you're prepared to say that most things we're currently complying with, but we don't have a documented process or a register to say this was due this date, this was submitted this date, tick. And this is basically trying to formalise that process. I understand Councillor Somerville's concerns about some of the detail in there as well. But this is a chance for us to get it in place. It's not going to be in place overnight. It's going to take some development. And there may be things that we do miss from time to time, as I've indicated. So we'll work through it. And now we've got the policy, we can build up the register. And we can actually present that register to ARIC down the track and say, OK, we've done this. OK, this one, we're a bit late with this one. These were the reasons. And that's how we've sort of looked at it.
I would have thought that particularly the legislative compliance policy or legislative compliance is a core function of the general manager, which then can be delegated to like a governance officer and finance directors and so on. But I would have thought that was a core component of what a general manager does, is to ensure that all legislation that affects us is complied with. Well, I mean, and what this is trying to do is really, as you say, Peter, is to formalise that better.
To have a document, have a
register, which you then say, okay, that legislation. There's a set of core things that we have to do every year. Dams, the dam safety which you were just talking about on the way down, things like that. They have to be ticked off at every step of the way. There's a few things that might crop up once in a while. You'll get a letter from the ministry saying, there's a change in legislation X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
So this thing goes into your register, and then you've got milestone dates against those
to comply,
and then you tick that off. That sounds like what this is aimed to do. Is that correct? So it's effectively formalising what you already do.
In terms of
answering Councillor Best's questions or comments, is that I'm not sure that there's going to be a hell of a lot more work and therefore more money required to do the job, because it's sort of formalising what actually happens.
It's part of your business as usual.
Through you, Mr. Chair, and same as your statutory reporting requirements, like in your financial statements, you've got certain dates and deadlines that you've got to have those. You've got to record on your statutory reporting requirements. Your annual report, your IPNR, there's all those statutory requirements, plus legislation we've got, obviously, with our Water Management Act. It's just a matter of formalising those, as you said, to say, okay, show me how you do that. Well, we do that through our audits. With the end of the report, we've got to send a link to the Office of Local Government to say our annual report is on our webpage by the 30th of November.
Yeah.
That'll be all documented in your compliance register, and obviously you can go through and check that off to make sure
that's done. Yeah.
And actually, probably would help, because we'll have that time frame then, that you've got to do something.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Help get
and then through Mr. Chetty, I would do send out a calendar each year, which has got all the compliance and reporting requirements on the calendar, the statutory reporting requirements, but this goes into more detail, doesn't it, with the legislation as well. So.
Through Mr. Chair, it's going to be a work in progress document until we build it up and have a bit of history and document it. So initially it's probably not going to be totally comprehensive, but we'll build it up over time as we get more and more tasks.
Okay, so the drive to have it done now is really the audit committee, is it?
It's the external audit.
External audit, so not the ARIC?
Not the ARIC.
No, so an external audit.
But that is part of their term of reference as well, to look at these compliance as well.
David, are you happy with that?
I mean, cyber security is absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. I mean, for organisations like ours have got a lot of public information, and of course, a lot of our, and more of our control systems are computerised. The risk we might have of some hack getting into not only our personal information of all our customers, but our control systems and our fluidisation processes and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it is absolutely critical. So I've got no problem about the fact we adopt these policies. I think what sticks in my craw is it could be, as a councillor, it's like, here's a rubber stamp, please stamp this. And by the way, you've got to do it tomorrow. It sort of takes councils to ground, would be, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, Mr. Chairman, I would say it's been a short period, certainly for consideration, but there is a period of 28 days public display, so which could be utilised.
I understand, Peter, but what we're doing is we're agreeing to it, put it out on. In other words, we're endorsing it. That's what it says, endorse it. But we're actually agreeing to this to go on public exhibition. In other words, the public who reads this will read it thinking this has been endorsed by the councillors. That's a really. I mean,
but. In where did that start standing like this?
I don't know what you can get off on it, but I'm happy to endorse it, get it out there.
Yeah.
But I do want to make the point on the way through that it is disappointing. That I get the impression that we'll just dish it up and the council will stamp it and away we go. And the one I did look at this morning was the legislative compliance. And it talks about compliance with contracts and funding agreements. I don't know whether it's intended or not. Do you know whether that's...
Through you, Mr. Chairman, certainly council complies with funding agreements.
Yeah. But is it going to be covered by the policy?
Well, I think that's part of your compliance. I know it's not a legislative thing, so that's to do with what you've agreed to say. Basically, you're going to do what you have said. As part of accepting those funds, you said you'll do certain things. And generally, we don't have an issue with that. Sometimes we need to ask for extensions, obviously. For time, we have that negotiation with the funding authority and so on. Contracts, also, we have a contract management policy that council has adopted some months ago, which we can, it's helped us to deal with those issues.
We have a register of contracts.
We're currently working on a register of contracts. We've done a review of our supply database, a quick review, but that's something we don't have. And that's another thing that's been identified as an area that we need to get a register. And we're in the process of looking at that as well.
Yeah, so will that come into this policy?
The register of contracts, in terms of compliance with in terms of having a register, you mean? Will that come?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the policy says we'll have a register of compliance, all the acts we've got to comply with, and all that sort of stuff. Will there be contracts covered by that?
There will be a contracts register that we will have in place. There will obviously be recurring contracts that we have in place, and then you'll have your one-off contracts for specific projects as well. We don't have that at the moment. And that's something we're working on as well.
As to be come within the umbrella of this policy, or is it a separate thing?
The register, having a register or making updates to the contract register would be something that would be in the legislative compliance register. I would imagine that's what. At the moment, we don't have a register of all their contracts. We have a supplier database. So to actually do that is a significant body of work as well.
Mm.
So that's something we have to do. And that's something that the external auditors have asked us about as well.
We just treated the chair. We've also been reporting on contracts over 50,000 each year as well, don't we?
In the annual report.
Yes, we report on those contracts every year for those large contracts.
Yeah, so the identity of the contracts, but our compliance with, not necessarily.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to over-engineer it.
No, I mean, well, that's exactly why I pointed out that it covers contracts as well. Anyway,
look,
I've said enough.
Yeah, no, look, I hear you, and we've been throwing this at the last second, and I think there were reasons, technical reasons, why that was the case, which have been explained, and I think in terms of us rubber stamping, I mean, we have little choice but to, because these are requirements given to us that we have to do these things.
Yes.
So, yes, the expectation of rubber stamping is actually coming from the external auditors.
Yeah.
We will, in fact, have these policies and rubber stamp them. I mean, but the detail that you've expressed, I think, can be dealt with in the next 28 days.
Yeah.
I think it's reasonable that we should potentially ask the audit, our committee, to have a squeeze at this as well. And any other yourself or anyone else who sees a concern about the detail in this, can talk to Peter and Gav in the next 28 days. That's what I would suggest we do.
Yeah.
Just to move that along. Is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Otherwise, we may have to make an amendment to this, if you wish to make an amendment.
Maybe we could just add the word "pays" to the second part, "pays to endorse," after the 28th day.
The way we do it in our council is at this stage we endorse the document to be passed out to the community for 28 days, and then when it comes back we accept it. So we accept the policy. And so it's an endorsement at this stage and an acceptance at the next stage. Yeah. That's the way we end.
Rob Gillard for the
meeting. Yeah.
Yep.
What time are we meant to do
that? Is that 1 o'clock? Am I too early?
Yeah, we're still not.
Sorry
about that.
Sorry about that.
Thanks.
Well
done. Yes, have it up, yeah, surely.
So you're saying no submissions are received?
Yes.
Yeah. We can always amend it as well later.
Well, through this chair, we can change, it's up to council, we can change that to the one and say that after the submission periods, the policy should be returned to council. Like we did with project management, policy and methodology, we can get them returned.
But if anyone's got any issues, they make a submission, so then it's going to be brought back anyway.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right, well, let's make an amendment to that number 3. The effect of what you've just said there. So it just comes, I mean, the normal process would be it comes back to us for us to make a final decision rather than.
It would be reactable anyway. We can just delete paragraph 3 and then we'll come back.
Okay, even better. Yeah. Even better, yeah.
Delete. Why? Why are we doing it? Because if someone wants a submission, then it would come back. If there is no submission, then it's just adopted because we're looking at time frames before the 30th of June. So if there is no one having any.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, if they, in response to the council, look, if they came back in June, that would be acceptable. That would be acceptable
to the section orders.
They want evidence to see that these policies have been drafted and
So if we removed the third item there, it's effectively saying that it's just going to come back to us and we will make a decision. But if there were no submissions in the meantime, that it would just be adopted.
It will, like the one we just had, project management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That came back with no submissions, we approved it.
Yes. Look, just to cover our backsides, let's have a third one there, which basically says it's going to come back to us at the next meeting for final acceptance. Okay, let's ensure that happens. It comes back. So it's not a fait accompli that if there are no submissions, that we still get another chance to have another look at it at the next meeting.
Just change be adopted. You could change that.
And then it comes back to council.
So third recommendation is that we can you write it? Can we have some wording for that?
after the submission period.
After the submission period?
The policy be returned to council for further consideration.
Correct. Okay. That sounds reasonable. And the people who moved and seconded the initial one, are you happy with that?
Yeah.
We didn't have one.
We got one for the report.
We moved the report first, didn't we?
I thought we did. We moved even before we came on.
We did.
No. Before you guys confuse everybody. You know that in our council we don't have that. When there's a late report, we don't have a step which is an acceptance of the late report before we even start looking at the late report.
You're lucky.
So that's why I didn't think
we had it. Yeah, we usually have them before. It comes before the meeting, doesn't it? Like the second day before, or 2 days before.
Yeah, generally.
Anyway, I'll move it again.
I'm happy to second again. Council on that. And you're happy with the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, so now we put the full amended
motion.
All in favour?
Aye.
That's accepted. So no, I don't even need a show of hands. I think it was accepted unanimously. So we all happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that. Now, next item is before lunch. Questions on notice, item 13.
There's no questions on notice, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Gav. And confidential matters. Has everyone got the confidential matters coming to theirs? The main report there is the general manager's contract. Oh, can we?
We're just resolved to normal
council.
You have to turn on the recording.
Okay, we are now out of confidential. And I need to mention the outcome of the confidential meeting, which is, bear with me for a sec while I go there. All right. Okay, so the item for confidential is relating to the general manager's contract, and it has been resolved that council, one, note the report, two, approve annual and special leave for the period requested by the general manager, three, appoint Mr. Graham Haley as interim general manager with associated delegations from 24th of June 2024 to 23rd of August 2024, four, authorise the chairperson to appoint a recruitment consultant to undertake a recruitment process for the appointment of a new general manager. Number five, endorse the general manager's recruitment panel consisting of the chairperson, deputy chairperson and councillor Ewan. And that was resolved in the confidential. I believe that is now the end of our meeting. I call the meeting closed at 1:58 p.m. Thank you. Yeah. Just before 2.